Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest running podcast, now in our 20th year. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we sit down with Chris Grove, the co-founding partner of Akios Investments, on Sweepstakes Casinos. Sweepstakes Casinos have been earning billions of dollars over the last 5 years, despite their shadowy legal status. Chris Grove, the co-founder of Akios Investments, explains why his firm, which includes former MGM Resorts chairman Jim Murren, has invested in this vertical, and explains why he thinks it's not really gambling. He cites the fact that over 80% of the players on sweepstakes casino sites never invest money, and they have the same chances of winning real money as those who do. He compares them to social casinos, which are the root of the sweepstakes casinos. He spoke with me from his home office in December. Chris, it's good to talk to you. We're going to talk about sweepstakes today because I know that's an interest of yours. And I'd like to talk to you at some time in the future about all your other endeavors, and there's quite a few of them. So we'll stick to sweepstakes today.
All right, sounds good.
So let's start with your investment company. You funded some of the sweepstakes companies. Why did you decide to invest there?
Sure. Look, we're investors in some two dozen companies, and the thing that we're looking for is the same across all of them, whether they're direct-to-consumer, whether they're B2B, whether they're in the traditional regulated space, or whether they sit in an adjacent category like sweepstakes. We're always asking the question, how strong is the organic demand for this product? Is the end customer signaling to us that they want this product? And we just see that in spades with social sweepstakes. This is a product that builds on the model of traditional social casinos, which consumers have embraced for almost two decades now, and adds that promotional sweepstakes layer that I think has supercharged the interest in consumers in these products.
So there's been a lot of back and forth, certainly at G2E this year, about the legality or whether or not sweepstakes casinos are gambling or not. Some say they are, some say they aren't. What's your view on that?
So we engage in the same process that any company, any entity does when they're getting involved in something that isn't explicitly licensed or regulated. It's the same process that DraftKings and FanDuel utilize for their unregulated fantasy sports businesses, or DraftKings utilizes for their largely unregulated lottery courier business, or FanDuel with FaceOff, which isn't regulated or licensed anywhere. You go to an established gaming lawyer and you ask for a qualified legal opinion, and you base your decision around legality on the strength of that legal opinion. And again, the standard operating procedure for licensed operators that get involved in unregulated businesses, for payment processors that get involved in businesses that aren't explicitly licensed or regulated. And that's the same thing that we look to as a firm when we're discussing legality. Taking it out of the specifics of a 50-state legal opinion from, you know, Dwayne Morris or whomever, and just getting into the more discussion-oriented construct. The first topic that we like to bring up when we're talking about the legality of sweepstakes is just to point to the operating model, which basically takes the traditional social casino product, which again, consumers have embraced for the last two decades. In the US, I think consumers have spent some $40 billion on social casino coins over the last 10 years. So not a lot of debate that there's a meaningful consumer demand for this product. And then we say, okay, if this is a legitimate consumer good, then we don't see a reason why you can't run a sweepstakes to promote the additional sales of that legitimate consumer good, just in the way that Starbucks does with coffee, or Coinbase does with crypto, or McDonald's does with hamburgers, right? When we start to get a little more down into the nitty-gritty, typically, and again, broad brush here, right? Not a gaming lawyer, right? Just pretend to be one on Twitter sometimes, but
right.
You really are looking at three legs of the stool when you're talking about gambling in most U.S. states.
Right.
Chance, consideration, and prize. You play a game of chance, you risk something of value, that's your consideration for the opportunity to win a prize. And as I think we'll get into in greater detail, with social sweep sites, no consideration is required. You can get free currency, and you can play the same games with the same odds and the same opportunity to win prizes as the folks who are making purchases. So it's the elimination of that consideration leg of the stool that much of the legal argument rests upon for social sweeps.
Right. But it's also very difficult to play on these sites and without buying in and playing completely for free and to win the prize in terms of.
I don't know that I'd say difficult. I mean, most sites are giving you the opportunity without restriction to get free entries via the traditional AMOE alternative means of entry, which again, Walmart uses, AT&T uses. You send the postcard into the PO box and you get your free entries. I can't speak for every single social sweep site in existence. The majority that we have exposure to also provide other opportunities to get free entries by logging in daily, by completing missions, so on and so forth.
Right. Okay. So let's talk about several iGaming states have banned sweepstake casinos because they think they're going to compete with the online casinos, the legal online casinos. But there's also states that don't have casinos, like Idaho and Washington, online casinos anyway, that have banned it. But now that the issue is up here, there's a lot of states looking into this. How do you think these states should respond when it comes to that?
Yeah, look, no explicit legislative ban in any state that I'm aware of that's directed specifically at sweeps. Certainly, there are states like Washington, which you mentioned, which are just hostile to any form of online gaming, even traditional social casino. I know you're well familiar with the hundreds of millions of dollars in settlements that were paid by Big Fish and other social gaming operators as a result of their participation in that state. In Michigan, the gaming regulator there has broader enforcement powers than gaming regulators in some other states. And they've also taken a very dim view of any kind of digital real money games that don't fit within their specific definition. Skill gaming is one that I know that the regulators went after there as well. And they were unique in terms of going after that. I think skill operates in the majority of states without any fuss being raised by regulators. Look, The broader topic here is where does this category eventually end up? And I know we're going to get into the specifics of that. To me, you and I have seen this story before. You've got a product that's popular with consumers. It has similarities to gambling. It resembles gambling. It has overlap with gambling. Those products tend to bend in the direction of regulation. And it wouldn't surprise me if we see a very similar arc, a very similar trajectory with social sweeps over time.
Okay. So they have, I mentioned Eilers Krejcik. They did a study on whether sweepstakes casinos cannibalize legal online casinos. And they actually pointed to Michigan, as you said. Explain how that's the results of that study, how that come out.
Really simple. So it was about 9 months ago that regulators in Michigan asked the major social sweeps operators to leave. Voluntary compliance was the reaction, I think, from every major social sweeps operator. So you have this interesting control group. In Michigan, you've now got 9-10 months of data about what does the state look like when social sweeps operators were in it and then left. So I think the premise is, if you believe that there are a lot of consumers who are using social sweeps as a substitute product, they would play online casino otherwise, well, you would expect Michigan's traditional online casino revenue to then jump or surge in the absence of social sweeps. Once that, in theory, competitive product left the market, that's not what EKG found. And to say that EKG found that is a little bit of an overstatement. The data is just there for anyone to look at. There's no massaging of it. There's no interpreting it. All EKG did was say, okay, what was Michigan's year-over-year growth rate for online gambling in that period? What did that look like relative to the growth rate of other states with legal online gambling like New Jersey and Pennsylvania and Delaware? And what EKG observed was that Michigan was actually below the average growth rate of all the iGaming states. There is a report out from Macquarie Research the other day that reached a similar conclusion for different reasons. What EKG concluded, what Macquarie concluded, and what I've seen in my experience is that the primary product that Social Sweeps competes with is traditional social casino. So your Zynga's, your SciPlay's, your Playtica's, that's the consumer that's really being battled over here. And also kind of explains why Howard Glazer at Light & Wonder is one of the leading critics of the social sweeps category, because I think in 2023, Light and Wonder made, can't make this number up, $777 million. So triple sevens from their SciPlay business. That's a pretty big social casino business to protect. Again, helps to explain why they've been one of the leading critics of the social sweeps category.
Okay. But they do a traditional social casino, which you buy in for the coins, and you, there's no way you can get a prize out of that.
Correct. Although they do run, somewhat ironically, they do run sweepstakes promotions, not the same kind and not cash-based, they're prize-based, but they do run sweepstakes promotions to incentivize the sale of additional social casino coins.
Okay, great. So I've seen this phrase alternative method of entry applied to sweepstakes casinos. Is that an argument for the legality of sweepstakes casinos?
Yep, that's the removal of consideration. So the idea that you have to risk something of value if you can get, and again, a very broad brush here, sure. But if you do not have to risk a thing of value in order to play a game and win a prize, generally speaking, that moves you into a different strata in terms of how you're thought of as a product, gambling versus not gambling. So yeah, the AMOE or alternative means of entry, that came about because of traditional promotional sweepstakes.
Sure.
And the question of, hey, is Publishers Clearing House actually an illegal lottery? Is McDonald's Monopoly actually illegal gambling? And so you always see that text at the bottom of the screen, no purchase necessary to enter. And then right. Some small print instructions about how you can get free entries. That's the legacy reason for the existence of AMOE and how it intersects with gambling laws. It really goes back to those traditional marketing and promotional sweepstakes and the need to clearly delineate those from activity that might fall under state gambling law.
Okay. I had the opportunity to interview Camilla Wright, the spokesperson for the SPGA, the Social Promotion Games Association, I guess. She says they want to operate legally and ethically. But they don't want to be regulated per se. They want self-regulation, but you know, you and I know self-regulation rarely works and rarely is accepted by the regulators. So why do you think this might work for sweepstakes casinos?
I think self-regulation and a code of conduct is a good starting point. I think the conversation around legislation and regulation gets a lot easier if you can bring a body of operators to the negotiating table and they can point to all of the things that they're already doing that are in the spirit of regulation. I think that helps to create a bridge toward regulation. I think if you don't have those kinds of, in the alternative, right? If you've got no self-regulation whatsoever, if you've got no standards whatsoever, it makes it a lot harder to make the case for regulation. And it makes it a lot easier for opponents to make claims that may be unfounded about how folks in the category are operating. So I think code of conduct is a good first step. I do not think it should be or will be the last step for the social sweeps category.
Okay. A class action lawsuit was filed last week in New York. Several players challenging these sites, saying they lost thousands of dollars and didn't realize they were actually gambling. Are you worried about more players could sign on to this lawsuit and the courts might take it seriously?
I think a class action lawsuit was filed today accusing the Wheel of Fortune slot machines of being rigged.
Right.
Naming IGT as a defendant. Roger, I honestly just don't think that American accesses the legal system is a legitimate headline. I think we all need to be thinking a bit more in the trade media. And I talk to a lot of my peers and my colleagues, and we talk about this at EKG as well. We need to be thinking a little more about what the threshold for newsworthiness is. And I don't know that the filing of a class action, which to me is just maybe one slight step above someone yelling on Twitter, I don't know that's newsworthy or something that we can really cover in a balanced way. Because if you think about it, class action gets filed, the defendant or their counsel is never going to comment on that case publicly. It's just not in their interest. So you're never going to get both sides of the story. And the class action, the plaintiff is incentivized to make outlandish claims because that's what generates media coverage and that's what creates some pressure on the defendant to settle. I think these conversations become a lot more meaningful when the lawsuit crosses that first procedural threshold, right? When it survives a summary judgment or a motion to dismiss, then I think we have something that's newsworthy, worth discussing, and worth categorizing or contextualizing as a legitimate threat. but otherwise you've just got one of what will be thousands upon thousands of suits filed. And again, they're not unique to social sweeps. DraftKings has however many outstanding. MGM's got a handful from the data breach. And I think it was the Indy that reported today that the Wheel of Fortune is rigged. They must have been playing at the airport and just didn't like RTP is my guess there.
So regulators are having a hard time getting their arms around social sweepstakes, and you guys are going to have to talk to them eventually. I mean, you know, you can, you know, quote all these, you know, legalities and things like that, but they're still going to be concerned that, you know, there are people putting money up to win money, you know, which is the definition of gambling. How are you going to talk to them and try to convince them that, that maybe, well, you tell me, do you want to be regulated by those entities?
Look, I'll speak from an investor perspective, the way that you get stability and sustainability in this category, the way that you can drive additional institutional investment and large exits in this category is by getting regulatory clarity and regulatory certainty. That state of ambiguity around the status of the category isn't great from an investor perspective. So that's something that I personally am motivated to drive toward. That's something that we talk to our companies about all the time. And as I mentioned earlier in our conversation, I think that's where this ends up. I think that's where the trajectory bends is toward regulation. With that said, I think it's good to reiterate that regulation, licensure, these are not, you know, magic lines where everyone sits on one side or the other. FanDuel and DraftKings operate numerous businesses that aren't licensed and regulated in all, or sometimes even in any of the states where they operate. Suppliers like Light and Wonder, you can find their games in dozens of international markets where they don't hold a license. So I think we do need to be a little more intellectually honest about the fact that this is ambiguity that exists across the gaming and gambling industry. And it's not just isolated to this one product or this one pocket. Back to your original question, I think regulation, good for the state, good for the category, good for the consumer. And it's where I'd like to see the category inevitably end up. I suspect the path toward that, by the way, is not dissimilar from the path that DraftKings and FanDuel took with their DFS product, which started operating outside of the regulatory structure and then eventually engaged in dialogue with regulators about the best way to bring it inside of the regulatory structure. Although, you know, still outside of the regulatory structure in a number of pretty big states, California, Texas, just to name a few. So reiterates that point that not everyone is cleanly on one side of the Rubicon or the other. There's a bridge and people commute back and forth over that on a regular basis.
Well, I think a lot of the problem here is that a lot of the state, you just mentioned two of the biggest states in the country that don't have any online gaming or online sports betting, and yet sweepstakes are operating there. So I think that this is the problem with the people like Howard Glazer and the big companies. They don't want to be operating in states that don't have any regulation on this kind of thing. So where do you think that's going to go when it comes to, there's a lot of the operators that would like to be in this space because obviously there's a lot of money in this space, but they're not because of the regulatory uncertainty.
Yep. Again, I think a rundown of every market that Light and Wonder offers their content in against the jurisdictions where they have explicit licenses to do so. I think those would be two pretty uneven columns. And it always makes me chuckle when Howard pretends otherwise in his commentary on this topic. And I'll point out, again, California and Texas, two states where DraftKings and FanDuel currently operate multiple unregulated products. So we shouldn't have this conversation in a vacuum and pretend that it's just social sweeps operators who are sitting in these states operating without an explicit license or explicit regulation. But look, the conversation starts, I think, in earnest, either when you have a state regulate this activity, and that was a trajectory that we saw with Daily Fantasy Sports. Once you had a state regulate it, that opened the door to other states looking at it in a more meaningful way. Alternatively, the other thing that we forget now, it's a little lost to history, but what really generated momentum for Daily Fantasy Sports was they took on some of the states that pushed back against them and they were successful in doing so, whether that was New York or whether that was Illinois or some other states on that list. I do think the rubber is going to meet the road at some point, probably in 2025, where you have a state challenge this activity and an operator says, see you in court. Either path gets us to increase clarity on what the rules of the road are. And as you get that increased clarity, I think that's when operators and suppliers are going to become more willing to engage in the category. So I think that's how we get from A to B. There are just a few different ways that that clarity can be produced. I don't have the crystal ball about which is more likely or what state it's going to happen in, but those are the ways it tends to happen.
Do you think this clarity might come with a sweeping federal ban, like the 2016 ban of online gaming, or conversely, the 2018 rule on sports betting that the Supreme Court put out? So do you think that's a possibility as well?
I'd be surprised. I don't think the incoming administration is in that much of a hurry to overregulate. That doesn't really seem to be their MO. Yeah. And I have a hard time believing that this would be a priority for the incoming administration. I'm also not aware of anything on the judicial side in terms of a case like we had, right, with the New Jersey case that was winding its way through the courts that provided the vehicle for federal courts to weigh on this issue. So who knows? Like many people, don't really know what's going to happen over the last 4 years, and definitely don't want to start pricing what the federal government might or might not do. We'll all find out together. But I just don't see this being at or near the top of the priority list. So I think this is going to be one where you're just going to see the issue mediated at the state level and largely through the state AG office rather than the legislature. That's my guess.
Okay, great. Well, Chris, thanks for the time. I really appreciate it. Interesting perspective. This is going to be going back and forth for quite some time. So I'd like to catch up again. And again, we'll do a podcast with some of your other ventures, which are also very impressive. So thanks for the time, and hope we see you soon.
All right. Thanks a lot, Roger. Thank you for making the time and having me on.
To read more about the topic presented in this week's podcast, visit ggbmagazine.com. To subscribe to GGB's executive summary, go to ggbnews.com and sign up. Don't miss any edition of the GGB podcast. Subscribe on Spotify, Amazon, or Apple Podcasts today. So we'll see you next time on the GGB podcast.